All right, I will say good morning. Our daf this morning is daf pei 80. We are picking up on Ayin Tes Amud Beis 79b. And we'll pick up again quickly from the Tanur Rabbanon, which is 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is sponsored by the Schoenfeld family in the Zuchus of Refuah Shalema for Tammy Moskowitz, for Tamara Dina, Bas Kaina Shulamis, and for the Aliyah of the Neshama of their son Moshe. We should hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Moshe's Neshama should have an Aliyah, and Tamara Dina should have a Refuah Shalema and the entire family in Nechama. So let's begin. We're going to pick up Tanur Rabbanon. So remember again, we began to discuss this yesterday, that if a person goes out and rents a donkey, and they rent a donkey for the purpose of having a man ride on it, so you can't change the details and have a woman ride on it. Isha, rocheval, and again, we discussed yesterday that the reason for that is because that a woman does not equally distribute her weight while riding on the donkey, and so ultimately, again, it causes a greater burden on the donkey itself. So therefore, again, a person who goes ahead and rents a donkey for a man to ride on it cannot switch the details and have a woman ride on it. However, Isha rochevala ish. But if he rented the donkey to have a woman ride on it, he could have a man ride on it because again, the load is less upon the donkey. The isha ben gedolo ben ketana. And if you rent the donkey to have a woman ride on it, so it doesn't matter. We don't assume that there's like a weight limit. We don't assume that you only rented the donkey for a woman up to this particular weight. Rather, when she's gedola ketana, a large woman, a small woman, afilu uberes, even if she's pregnant. Even if she's nursing, I will say even if she's nursing, to which the Gemara says hashta menika amres no beresi. So the Gemara says like this: that when the Gemara talks about a nursing woman, that assumes that what? It's the woman and she's holding her baby. Meaning, when it says nursing, they're not talking about the extra weight that she might be carrying because she has milk. They're talking about the extra weight she has because she's carrying a baby with her. So if you already told me that you could put a woman who's a menika, who's carrying the baby with her, so do you have to say a me'uberes? Is it necessary to say a pregnant woman? Amar papa, me'uberes v'hi menika ka'amar. What it means is she is pregnant and she's nursing. So we'll say, so what does that mean? It's talking about a woman who has triple weight. The triple weight is herself, right? The waiters, be careful with these lashonos if you use them, but, right? Meaning she has her weight, she has the baby in utero, and of course she has the baby that she's holding. See, even again, this type of woman, you'd be able to put on the rented donkey. Amra Abaye says, just as an aside, Shmamina Bensa Akarsa Tikla. Learn from here that a fish's weight is determined by its belly. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, If you buy a fish, ultimately in the marketplace because of its weight, if its stomach is larger, just know that again its weight is going to be greater. So you see this of Shkoyach, meaning what's the big chiddush in that? To which the Gemara says, what does that matter? L'mekach u'memkar. Ultimately, again, it matters for business purposes. How so? Look at Rashi. L'mekach u'memkar. Im ra'isa dag shekreso gadol, lo siknei b'mishkal, ela im ken yotzi esmeyot. If you see a fish that has a large stomach, lav dafko, that's going to give you a lot of fish. That could mean, right, see, tell me if I'm getting everything right over here. But what could happen? Meaning he has a lot of kishkas in it. But those kishkas, lav dafka, is stuff you want to eat. So just know that if you see a large fish, make sure that before you buy it, you first take out the kishkas, you take out the insides, and then ultimately, again, you're paying for the amount of fish that's actually consumable. Okay, says the Mishnah. I'm sorry?
Great place for that. It's a great place for that.
Oh, for this aura. Right? Well, it's here because of the pregnancy. It's here because of the pregnancy. That's the lead-in. Sorry, we'll say Taf Peh Amud Aleph Mishnah. Hasoch Hasafar Alach Rosh. So again, remember, we're continuing on the theme of renting for one purpose, and then going ahead and using it for something different. So says the Gemara, or says the Mishnah, Hasoch Hasafar Alach Rosh Bahar V'Charosh Bevika. So ultimately, if a person goes ahead and rents a cow, to go ahead and plow on a mountain, and he ends up plowing, and instead the renter uses it to plow in the valley, Im nishbar hakankan, I will say, so the kankan is like the blade of the plow. If the blade of the plow breaks, so potter. Ultimately, again, so the renter is potter. I will say, now just so you understand over here, the assumption that we're dealing with is that a mountainous soil is rockier than valley soil. So as a result, if I went ahead and I hired the cow, now I send rented the cow. I'm about to say, now understand over here, when you rent a cow, Rashi points out over here, first Rashi in the Mishnah, v'chol kli ha-macharisha lebal ha-bakar. So when you rent a cow for plowing purposes, it's not just the cow, but you also rent all of the plowing equipment. The na'arav hokin behemto. Furthermore, again, the guy from whom you are renting the cow also has workers who will help you go ahead and use the plow. The ze'ochis supposed to say, therefore, if I'm renting a cow from someone for plowing purposes, essentially I'm renting a whole package. I'm getting the cow, the plow, and the guys, right? And the workers. So I'm renting all of these, we'll call them from Reuven, who's the owner. And what happens? The ze'ochis hadarban lechavein par letamel. So what am I doing? What am I, the renter, doing? I'm holding the darban. Supposed to say, the darban, they translate as the goad. So the goad is like the little whip that keeps the cow on, that prods the cow to stay on the right course. So I'm responsible for driving the cow, so to speak, and then we have the plow behind me and the guys behind the plow navigating the plow. That's how this works. Rashi says over here, So the key over here is that I went ahead and I rented the cow and the plow and the guys to plow on the mountain, and I changed and I plowed in the valley. So if the plow breaks, if the blade breaks, the coulter, as Rashi calls it, breaks, so the maisa I am potter. The reason for that is because if it broke in the soft soil of the valley, it certainly would have broken in the rockier soil of the mountain. However, babika, the charash bahar, but if I went ahead and I rented the cow to go ahead and plow in the valley, the charash bahar, but instead what? I go ahead and I use it in the mountain, and what happens? Im nishbara kankan, if the plow, the blade of the plow broke, then chayiv. Then ultimately, again, it will be chayiv. We'll say why? Because here, it quite possible that had I used it in the valley with the softer soil, the plow would not have broken. Lodush bekitnes v'dash b'tvua. Similarly, we'll say it's an interesting case. Let's say I rented an animal to go ahead and thresh kitnes. Kitnes are legumes. And instead, I go ahead and I use it to go ahead and thresh wheat. Potter. So we'll say, so what happened over here? The animal slipped and broke its leg. Now remember, I deviated. I rented it to go ahead and thresh legumes. I used it to thresh wheat, and now it got injured. What's the halacha? Potter. Why? Because we'll say the assumption is legumes are more slippery than wheat. So therefore, I will say like this, if I rented it to go ahead and thresh legumes, the assumption is there is a danger of slippage, and therefore, again, if I go ahead and use it for wheat, which is less slippery, then halacha lamaisa I am potter. On the other hand, ladosh betuva b'dash v'kitnis, but if I went ahead and rented the animal to go ahead and thresh wheat, and I used it by kitnis, by legumes, chayiv. Then ultimately, again, I will be chayiv for that deviation. Why? Mipnei shakitnis mechalekis. Because ultimately, again, the legumes are more slippery than the wheat. Fine. So we'll say, so you see, the bottom line is that although we would be tempted to say any single time you deviate from the terms of the rental agreement, you should be chayiv, we see at the end of the day that's not necessarily true. Right? We see at the end of the day that sometimes, again, it depends. Did you go ahead and switch to something that created a heightened liability or a lesser liability? You're only going to be chayiv for heightened liability. Okay? So says the Gemara. Hecha delo shaniba man mishan. So also now the Gemara asks a different question. What happens in a case where I rented a cow to go ahead and plow my field? So I rented the cow with the plow and the guys to work the plow. And what happens? I didn't deviate, meaning I rented it to go ahead and plow my field, wherever the field is, doesn't matter. And that's where I'm plowing. And then what happens? In the course of the plow breaks, right? The coulter, the blade breaks. Who is chayiv? Now, what do you mean, who is chayiv? Remember, there are two people at play over here. There's me, the renter. What am I doing in this? I'm going ahead and leading the cow, right? I'm the guy with the goad. I'm the guy with the prodder to keep the cow on the right track. And then there are the hired workers who really work ultimately for the balabas, for Reuven, for the owner of the cow, who are on the back guiding the plow. So the shayla is, at the end of the day, who is chayiv if the plow breaks. Remember again, no deviation of terms of rental. Here it's just a din of ischayvus. Look at Rashi. Ve'echa de lo shani, ve'in la balapara letivoa lo klum. And in this case over here, the balapara, the balabas of the par, can't go ahead and claim anything against me. I didn't deviate. Ve'elu shayi b'pulos ha'manik va'ochis yachad, shechirim hayu, eizmen po sheh b'shiras ha'kankan. So we'll say, who is, Rashi happens to point out over here that the case that the Gemara is talking about is that the guys working on the plow were actually hired workers as well. Lav Davka, they work for Ruvain. They're guys that I hired for this job. So who is Chayiv? To which the Gemara says, Amar Rapapa, Dinokit Parsha Mishalim. Rapapa says, the one who goes ahead and is handling the Parsha is the one who goes ahead and has to pay. What's the Parsha? Look at Rashi. Dinokit Parsha, Mardeuhu Mishalim Shal Kivin Es HaPara Yafa, Va'idesh Ives Es HaShura Shal Ma'ana Nishpara Kankan. But say, so the guy who's holding the goad, meaning me, the renter, the guy who's holding the goad, he is the guy who is Chayiv. Why? Because the reason that we assumed the plow broke was because the cow was not going in a straight line. In other words, apparently if you like go zigzag, that heightens the possibility that the plow is going to break. So because we put the responsibility on the shoulders of the driver, we'll call him, the guy with the goat, he's responsible for the breakage. Rav Shisha Brei Durav Idi Amar, Denakit Mana Mishalim. Rav Shisha Brei Durav Idi says, no, the one of us who is in charge of the kankan, who is in charge of the actual plow, he is the one who is responsible for the breakage of the plow. So the Gemara says, fine. And ultimately, again, the halacha is that the one who is controlling the plow is the one who is chayev ultimately for any breakage. V'i duchta de Mexico gundari, tarvayhu mishalmin. But I will say, if at the end of the day, the field is a place, de Mexico gundari, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, first of all, the hilchasa denakit mana mishalim. So the halacha is that the one who is controlling the plow is the one who is chayiv if it breaks. Shiloloha miku yosemidai, lohayo nishbar bi ibe sashos. Well, it's actually very interesting. So apparently, when you're plowing, you could adjust the plow to have the blade go into different depths of the ground. And depending on the rockiness of the soil, the person who's driving the plow or in charge of the plow has to figure out what depth to put the blade. So if you put the blade too deep, and that's why it broke, so ultimately, guys, the Gemara Paskins, that responsibility for the broken blade of the plow rests with the guy who's in charge of the plow. However, says the Gemara with one exception, if e de mechskog begundar, Rashi says shayi yadua lahem bahar shema'ala avon and tsunma betarshin. But if you know that the mountain was, or if you know that the place where they were playing is a very rocky place, then what? Then sharvayu mishalman. Then both the driver as well as the one who's managing the plow both have joint responsibility for this. Vine, Amr Yochanan. This was a very interesting case. I sell a cow to my friend, and I say to my friend, this cow is an akhonis, this cow is a gorer, right? A gorer, meaning cow that gores. He, nashchanasi, it bites, ba'atonasi, it kicks, raftsanasi, it sits on stuff. Vahaya ba, so, but otherwise, it's a good cow. I'm saying, otherwise, this is mamish, like, you know, no cow is perfect. Right, it has wonderful midos though. Aside from this, wonderful midos, ala midos. Right, so says the Gemara the following. So again, in this case, the seller is saying it has all of these problems, and then what happens? V'haya b'mumacher, and by the way, it had another problem. Like, you know, for whatever it is, whatever the other mum is, v'sanfo bein hamumin. Now, what ended up happening, I will say, in this case over here, is the seller included the real mum, or I should say, a real mum, in between all of these other mumin. And then what happens? And then so I buy the animal anyway. Now both say, now why do I buy the animal anyway? So Rashi says over here, well actually before I get to it, I buy the animal anyway, and then it turns out that's what? The animal really does have that mum, the one that was included with all of the others. The halacha is Tarezem Mekachtos. We'll say this is a voidable sale. Now, what's happening over here? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, "V'sanfu ba'at min amumin achir." We'll say now the case over here is the following: the owner of the animal says this animal kicks, bites, gores, squats on stuff that does belong to it. All of this stuff, and also includes like it's also blind in its right eye. You know, for argument's sake, blind in its right eye. So we'll say, so I know already. I know that the owner is, that the animal doesn't have these movements. The animal is not a gorer, however I know it, right? I've been following this animal. The animal is not a gorer, it's not kicker, it's not kicking stuff, it's not squatting on stuff. Now why is the owner saying all this stuff? Why is he saying all of this? He's saying it because he wants to be freed from liability. Because if he says on the front end, the animal has all of these problems, and I buy it anyway, this buyer can't come back to the seller. But what does he do? In the list of all of these supposed issues the animal has, he includes a real mum. The real mum is the animal's blind in its right eye. Now what happened? See, I didn't pay attention to the blindness in the right eye. Why? Because I was distracted by everything else, right? No, because Lemaisa again, I assumed what he's doing is he's enumerating every single possible thing that could be wrong in the animal. So that's essentially I'm buying the animal as is, right? I'm buying the animal with all of its imperfections. But I didn't actually think that the animal was blind in its right eye. Because again, he was listing this mum in the list with all the other women that I know the animal did not have. So I just assume it didn't really have this one either. I get home and then what happens? I wonder, why is the animal constantly walking into the right wall? Right? And then I realize because it's blind in its, or left wall, because it's blind in its left eye. So lemaisa, again, I could void the sale. I could claim a mekachtos. Now look at Rashi. How is it a mekachtos? Because it will say, I knew. Either after my investigation, due diligence, or whatever, I knew that the other movement that the owner said the animal possessed, it didn't really have. And I knew the owner was lying about all these other movement. But I also understand why an owner would lie. Why would he say this? Because what he's trying to say is, listen, if you're going to buy this animal, don't come back to me because of anything. So I recognize he was lying. So we'll say, when I bought it with the understanding that everything the owner is saying, the animal really doesn't have. He's just saying these things to free him from liability. And therefore, I assume that since the majority of the list, or not the majority, or a majority of the list of the items, the animal did not possess, I assume right eye blindness also it didn't possess. Therefore, I could avoid the sale. However, mum zeh umum acher, but if the owner were to say, the animal has this mum and another mum, look at Rashi, mum zeh umum acher, shepirishlo, sham osa mum levado, v'amr lo mum zeh ba, v'od mum in acherim. But if, let's say, the owner were to say, the animal is blind in its right eye, and the animal also has other mum, in other words, that the real mum is articulated by itself, and then he goes through the laundry list of other women, then what? Then ein zeh mekachtos. So you hear the distinction on the two cases. In case number one, the blind right eye was just included in the laundry list of other women that the animal did not possess. So again, as a purchaser, I have a right to say that once I know that the first 17 items on the list the animal does not possess, there's no reason for me to think that it has the 18th. On the other hand, if the blind eye is explicitly articulated first, and the order itself isn't, well, let's assume first, and then the owner says, and it also has these other movement, then ein achinami, I should have been aware of the blind eye, and if I purchase the animal anyway, I can't go ahead and claim mekachtos. Tanya namiyachi, we have a brisa that supports this. Hamocha shivcha lechavero, if my friend is selling me a shivcha kinanis, a Gentile maidservant, va'amarlo, and my friend Reuven tells me the seller, shivcha zu shotehi, she's crazy, nechfefes hi, I will say nechfefes, Rashi says, nofeles mecholi. It's very interesting. Nofeles mecholi means she has seizures. Nechfefes is the way the Gemara refers to what we today call epilepsy. Epilepsy is referring to people who had epileptic seizures. They would just fall down and begin to seize. So she has epilepsy. He mishomemesi. Now, by the way, it's just interesting to see how exactly epilepsy was understood, was often understood in the Gemara, that you see it's often sometimes mentioned in the same context as shote, right? Because, again, a person would fall down, begin to seize, and in the midst of that seizure, looked like they were crazy. It's just fascinating to see. So she's a shote, she's nechfefe, she's epileptic, mishomemes he. Rashi says, mishugas. Now, I will say, now, shote and mishuga are often different. I should say, the craziness manifests itself in different ways. Okay? V'haya ba mum acher. And what happens? And by the way, like, there's another mum. Now, she's not actually any of these things. She's not epileptic, she's not the shota, and she's not the meshuga. So, but yet the owner said all these things. And again, the logic over here is people would say this kind of stuff just to free themselves from any liability, but the owner also slides in that list another mum that the shivcha actually does have. That she does have. but I, the purchaser, just didn't feel that there was anything real being said here, because I know that the other woman, Shota, Meshugas, Nichfefes, is not true. So therefore, I discounted the real mum as well. And what happens? Hareza Mekachto. So we'll say, then I get home, I realize the Shifcha does have this real mum, I could void the sale. On the other hand, Mum ze'u mum acher, ein ze mekachtos. What says we said before, but if Lamaisa, the owner articulated, the Shifcha has this mum, and also, by the way, the Shifcha is nechfefes, mishugas, shota, everything else, then the halacha is in ze mekachtos. Then ultimately, again, I can't claim a mekachtos. We'll say just the same brisa supporting what we said before. So again, it's actually really important, al talacha lamaisa as well, that if an owner is claiming that the object has all of these flaws, essentially in order to free himself from all liability, and puts in that laundry list of false flaws a real flaw, I, the buyer, assume that the list of flaws, because I know that everything he's articulated, the object or the person, the Shefcha, does not have, I have every right to assume that everything on that list is false. Therefore, if it turns out that one of them is, you have the right to void the sale. But if the real mum was explicitly articulated, and then he went into the laundry list of fake mumin, then Einachinami, I can't claim Mekachtos, I should have done my due diligence. So this is how the Gemara asks an interesting question. So what happens if, let's say, whether it's the Shifcha case, whether it's the Para case, the object in question, or the person in question, had all of these mumen. Had all of these mumen. So what is that? Well, say, what does this mean? Look at Rashi. So what happens? Let's say again, the Para has all of the mumen that the owner articulated, but I, the purchaser, really only care about one of the mumen. And what happens? Uba v'torno kisavr ha'yisi sha'ata kolel ba, ma she'in ba, so we'll say, in this case over here, what happens if the animal does have all of the mumen? Does have all of the mumen. Now the truth is, I don't care about all of the mumen except one. But when I went ahead and I bought the animal, I assume the animal really didn't have, I don't care that it has 99% of these. One of them I do care about, but it turns out that the animal does have all of the mumen. Do I have the right to void the sale because of the one that I care about? So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hachir Mimshei Dirava, Hayu Ba Kala Mumen Halalu, Ein Ze Mekachtos. To which the Gemara says, no. At the end of the day, again, you can't, if the seller explicitly says it has all of these mumen, the fact that you might have thought that he's just bluffing and freeing himself from all liability, if the animal does have actually all of these mumen, you can't go ahead and claim mechatos after the fact. Okay, says the Mishnah. Now we're going to get into an interesting discussion here. I rent an animal, I rent a chamor, to go ahead and transport chit and wheat. And what happens? The animal brings sorin. Instead, I put barley on the animal, chayiv. I am chayiv for the change. Now, we are going to discuss chayiv under what context. So Rashi kind of gives away a little bit. Rashi says, we're talking about a situation where you're actually putting more barley on than wheat. That's why I will be chayiv, where I'm increasing the load of the animal. But we'll see it in the Gemara. Tavua, vehevi ala tevin. Similarly, if I was supposed to transport tavua, wheat, and then what happens? Or grain, I should say. It was grain. And instead, I go ahead and I use it for straw. Chayiv. I'm chayiv. Why? Because we'll say, it's actually very interesting. What the Gemara is going to get into now is the following. Look at Rashi. Nafach literally means the bulk. The bulk actually is like a burden on the animal. Look at Rashi. We're going to see there are certain things which, although they may be the same weight as another item, the mass is distributed differently of the item. So because the mass is distributed differently, therefore what? Therefore could create a greater burden on the animal. So this is very interesting. We'll discuss essentially two different types of cases. One type of case where I rented an animal to carry a load of X. So obviously, if I load on X plus Y, and the animal buckles, or the animal is injured as a result of that additional weight, I can hear that I'm chayiv. We're going to discuss situations where, even though I'm not adding any technical weight, but because I'm changing the nature of the load, the nature of the load ultimately, again, could have a negative impact on the animal as well. Really interesting. What's also interesting, I'll say, by the way, is, you know, we're so far removed from these halachas because we just don't live in an agrarian society. But, you know, so we learn this. And it's interesting, understand that in Bismana Gemara, even later than that, you know, this was like the bread and butter of everyday life. Like these halachas, like this, you know, we look at Arachayim as like our activities, halachic activities. This was everyday life. Incredible. So the Gemara says the following. If I hired an animal to go in and transport the lesech, lesech is an amount of grain, of wheat, and instead I use it to transport the lesech of barley, potter. Because again, the assumption is, even though we will see that barley and wheat have different mass distributions, nevertheless, again, I'm potter because the sum total weight is the same. But if I add on to the burden of the animal, I will be chayiv. So here's an interesting question. Now remember again, whenever you're loading up an animal, we have to make an automatic assumption that what? It's not going to be precise. Right? So meaning, if I'm going ahead and I'm hiring an animal, I rent an animal to go ahead and transport a lesach of wheat. You know, it's going to be more than a lesach, less than a lesach. So obviously, we're not going to be exact. So the shayla is, now, on the same token, if I go ahead and I rent an animal to transport an explicit amount, that's my right to transport that amount. Obviously, then, if I overload the animal, I'm going to be chayiv for subsequent injuries or damages. Now, the important question comes up of how much extra can I pile on the animal without be considered to be overloading the animal? The Kama Yosef Amasavi Yechai. So I'll say, how much more, I mean, up until what amount can I pile on ours? From what point in on am I chayiv for putting an excess burden on the animal? Simchas Rav Shimon Rav Meir, Sa'a L'Gamal, it's one Sa'a for a camel, Shlosha Kabin L'Chabar, and three Ka for a donkey. Which I will say, first of all, Simchas has a very interesting idea, which is, there's not one answer. It depends on what? It depends on the nature of the animal. So for a Gamal, it's going to be an extra Sa'a. Up to a Sa'a, you're okay. More than a Sa'a, you will be chayiv for overloading the animal. And for a camel, for a donkey, it'll be three kabin. Itmar, Abai Amar, Sabai says the following. So kasha kemasuitnan, Rava Amar kasha limasuitnan. Supposed to listen to this. So remember again, the Mishnah began with a case where I went ahead and I contracted or I rented the animal to go ahead and take sorin, right? If I went ahead and I hired the animal to go ahead and transport grain, and instead I went ahead and, well, actually, I'm sorry, the first two cases, I went ahead and rented the donkey to bring chita, to bring wheat, and instead I brought sorin, chayiv. If I went ahead and hired the animal to bring tevuah grain, and instead I brought upon it straw, I'm going to be chayiv. Why? The wording of the Mishnah was b'pei shanafach kasha kamasei, because the bulk is kasha kamasei, is like a burden. So Rashi says over here, Abai says kasha kimasui. Look at Rashi, kasha kimasui. Kedepushes. Afa pei shein mason kavid kimasachitin hari nafchan kinafachitin va'nafach kamasei. Abai is telling us that the Mishnah is teaching us there are certain things that have a greater mass or a more intense mass distribution. Therefore, again, even though I'm not putting any more of the second item on the animal, nevertheless, the mass distribution makes it like the animal is carrying a burden. Rava says, Kasha Lemasui. Rav says, ultimately, again, the problem over here is that the burden is going to be too great for the animal to go ahead and carry. So Abai Amar, Kasha Kimasui Tanan. Abai says, the Mishnah is teaching me that there are certain things that although the weight is not greater, the mass intensity is, and therefore it's too great for the animal to carry. So the Gemara says, Nafcha Kitikla. He will say, ultimately, again, because the mass of an object is like its weight. V'imosif shlosha kab in chayiv. And therefore, it's only if you add on an additional three kab of actual product that you're going to be chayiv overloading the animal. Rava Amar Rava says, kasha limasui, that at the end of the day, this extra burden or this different burden becomes too difficult for the animal to carry. Tikla ki tikla, v'nafcha habitosefes. Weight is weight, but in Rava's view, I will say, the extra bulk of an item is tantamount to extra weight. Tinan. Lahavi lesech itin vehavi lesech saorin. So we'll say, if I rented the animal to go ahead and bring a lesech of wheat, a lesech is a measure, and instead I put on it a lesech of saor of barley, potter, then ultimately again I am potter, because the assumption is a lesech is a lesech is a lesech. V'mhosif amasol chayiv. And if I add it onto the burden of the animal, I will be chayiv. What does it mean, add it onto the burden? My love, shloshes kabin. Does this not mean adding on three kav lo saw. Rather, it means no, even if you add on a saw. I katani, but yet it says v'kami yosif amasavi yichayiv. But yet it said in the Mishnah, how much do you have to add on to the burden in order to be chayiv for overburdening the animal? Saw the gamal. It means one saw for a camel. Shlosha kabin lachamer. Three kav ultimately for a donkey. To which the Gemara says, "Hakikam." This is what it means to say, "Heicha delo shani chitin v'hevi chitin." I'm both saying a case where I did not change the rental agreement. I rented the animal to go ahead and transport wheat, and I'm bringing wheat, or I rented the animal to transport psar barley, and I'm bringing psar. Kama Yosef ama sovi heichayir. I'm both saying, how much do I add on? Meaning, how much can? At what point in time, if I add it on, how much do I have to add on to be chayiv? So the Gemara says, one saah for a camel, three kabin for a chamer. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following. These amounts mentioned in the Mishnah is when you're not deviating from the terms of the agreement. So if I went ahead and I rented the animal to transport grain, and I am transporting grain, that's where Simchas comes along and says, if you add on X amount of grain, you will be chayiv for overloading the animal. But if you go ahead and you switch from grain to barley, so then again, it could be that overloading even of lesser amounts, or say adding of lesser amounts, could be tantamount to overloading the animal. Why? Because since the bulk, we'll call it the nafach, the bulk ultimately of barley, is different than the bulk, which we call the mass distribution of grain, even adding on a smaller amount could ultimately result in the overburdening of the animal. That's what I say. That's the take-home message over here. That lemaisa, again, when you're adding on more of the agreed-upon product that is being transported, that's where Sumchus's amounts come in the Mishnah. But when you are changing the product that is being transported, then it could even adding on of lesser amounts could result of an overburdening of the animal as a result of the mass distributions of this new item. Fine, says the Gemara, Tashma, last line, Tashma, lavi lasechitin, if a person goes ahead and rents the animal to transport the lasech of chitin, the heavy, sheish esrei saorin, and instead, what do? I go ahead and I transport 16 saw of barley. Now, we'll say, if you look at Rashi, sheish esrei, tosefes saw, So what I've done now is I've added on an extra saw in order to make this the equivalent of that same amount of wheat. So apparently 16 saw of barley is the equivalent of the weight amount of one lesech of wheat. So says the Gemara, or the mass amount, I should say. So the Gemara says, chayif, you're chayif for that. So we'll say, now remember, you're chayif for that because in reality, the barley is going to be heavier because of the mass distribution. So ha, shloshes kabin pater. But you see that if you were to add on an additional three kav, you would be pater. So tergema abaye says, b'machkisa. What says interesting? Machkisa means, Rashi says, ani shamati so'orin she'esliu. So Rashi at first says that it means barley that became wormy. But then Rashi goes on to explain that what it actually means is a load that's been leveled. The idea over here is, remember, you could put different kinds of loads on an animal. You could pile it up, or you could level it out. Apparently, again, when the load is leveled, the mass distribution makes it a bit easier to be transported by the animal. Fine. Turn up on him. Kavla kasef. So let's listen to this. Now the Bryce is going to quote the following. The Bryce is going to quote the different amounts that are considered to be overburdening. So for example, we'll say a kasef is someone who goes out and carries something on their back. So a kavla kasef means what? Look at Rashi. Kav havi tosefes la'adam hanose b'kasef. V'chayev hanose b'kilkulo. So the idea over here is, if I hired someone, a porter, right? I hired someone to schlep stuff for me. So what happens? If I put a quart or more of additional stuff on them, that is considered that I've overburdened the individual. And therefore, again, I would be chayiv for any resulting damages that may occur to that person. So, adriv la'ariva. So we'll say, look at Rashi, adriv la'ariva, lesech. So adriv apparently is a lesech. If I hired a small boat to go ahead and transport item, if I go ahead and overload it by a lesech, that is considered overload. Let's remember again, these amounts are important because if any damages occur as a result of overloading, I'm only chayiv if I overloaded by this amount or more. So I rented a small boat. If I overloaded it by less than a lesech, I'm not chayiv for damages. More than a lesech or more, I will be chayiv for damages. La'ariva, kor. We'll say, what's an ariva? So I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Adrib la riva. Kor l'svina. We'll say svina is a large boat. So if an adrib is a small boat, then ultimately, again, svina is a larger boat. So if I overload a larger boat by a kor or more, I'm going to be chayav for damages. Shloshes korim leborni gedola. And I will say, borni gedola is a large ship. So we've got an ariva, which is like a small boat, a svina, which is a larger boat, and a borni, which is a ship, right? A larger boat. So what's the halacha? So again, three korim is the amount that one could, up to three kor is the amount that one could put on to a borni. More than three kor, ultimately one would be chayav for damages. Amar mar, kav l'kasev. So we'll say, let's go back for just a moment. We just said before that if you're hiring a porter to go ahead and carry stuff, so again, if you make him carry more than a kav, ultimately that's overloading you and you're chayav for damages. But I don't understand. Im isa de lo matzibe, Bardas Ulishte. Why would you ever have a case, Rabbi say, of a porter who is going to suffer damages as a result of overloading? He's a bardas. As a bardas, if the load is too heavy, what should he do?
Take it off.
I understand. Meaning, you know, a boat obviously cannot remove the additional stuff that's on it. Even an animal doesn't always have the ability to overload the additional stuff that's on it. But if a person is overloaded with stuff, let him just take it off. Rabbi says the case of Rav Osai is that he was so overloaded that he buckled under the load immediately. Meaning he didn't have time to unload, he buckled under the load immediately. Rav says, no, even if he didn't buckle under the load immediately, Rav Osai, we're talking about a case where what? It's not that he can't handle the load. It's just that what? This is not what he was contracted to do. Therefore, what the Bryce is teaching me is, if you overloaded him by more than a kor, by more than a kan, then what's the halacha? You have to pay him extra. That's what it means. He can handle it. The porter can handle it. But Lamaisa, if you're overloading his load by more than a kan, just understand, you owe him additional wages. So the Gemara says the following, Rabashi Amar, the other possibility of Rashi is the reason why the porter did not unload the load was why, even though it was too heavy, was why? He just thought the problem was him. Right? He thought the problem was me. I didn't have a big enough breakfast. I'm just feeling a little bit weak today. I should be able to handle this load. That's why I didn't unload it. But I will say, if I end up overloading the porter more than what he was supposed to carry, I'm chayif to pay him extra for carrying that additional load. So let's remember again, we said that if you overload a smaller boat by a kor, or three kor for a larger boat, and chayiv ultimately for overloading, so see from here that a stam svino, just a regular boat, has the ability to carry 30 kor. What does this matter? It matters for business purposes. If you're either purchasing or you are renting a boat for commerce purposes, and it turns out that the boat is not capable of carrying 30 kor, that one would be permitted to go ahead and claim a mekach tos as a result. Fine, says the Mishnah. Well, so now we get into a different figure. Kala umnin shomri sacharin. We'll say craftsman. Now, what does this mean, umnin? So we'll say, in this case over here, I have given an object to a craftsman to work on my object. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's my shoes, or right to fix my shoes, or to fix my watch, whatever it is, I give it to the uman. And the idea over here is, the uman, Rashi says, kolo umnin kablonin ame kablonin alein lasos amalacha bevateyem. The uman often does the work in his own home. So I give him my watch to go ahead and work on my watch in his home. We'll say, what's his relationship to my object? Meaning, what's his relationship to my watch? To which the Mishnah tells me, his relationship is, he's a shomer sachar. He is a paid custodian vis-a-vis my watch. Shomer sachin, bekulon sh'amru tala shalcha, va'aveimo, shomer chin. We'll say, the moment that the uman says, listen, come pick up your watch, right? And give me my money, he transforms into a shomer chinam, into an unpaid custodian. Just understand, obviously, the idea of being a shomer sachar, a paid custodian, represents a heightened level of responsibility, specifically with Geneva Vaveda. If the object is stolen or lost, ultimately the shomer chayav. Suppose what the Mishnah is saying is the following. When the uman is working on my watch, he's a shomer chinam. But the moment he says, pick up your watch, so I can get, and I'd like to get paid, he becomes When he's working on my watch, he is a shomer sachar. The moment that he says, come pick up your watch, right, and give me my money, he is a shomer chinam. Look at Rashi, transforms. Look at Rashi. V'kulon sh'amru tola shalcha, shekvar gamarti. I have finished my work, says the watchman. It says the uman, umish, or watchmaker. Umishetotzi enu, have maus, sheni ma'akval topsu al schar harem me'atashom rechino. We'll say now, here's what's interesting. What the Mishnah says is often, what the uman would say is the following, come pick up your watch. Now, we'll say, now understand, there are two ways that the uman could play this. The uman could say, I'm not going to give you your watch until you give me the money, and that's fine, in which case, again, he's going to remain a shomer sachar. However, again, and we'll discuss why that is. However, if he says, listen, pick up your watch, and you'll pay me. If you could pay me upon receipt, that would be wonderful, but if not, you'll pay me when you could pay me, then he becomes a shomer chinam. So, because at that point in time, what he's saying is, if I'm not going to hold the watch until you pay me, but I'd like you just to pick up your finished product, then lemaisa again, under those circumstances, he becomes a shomer chinam. Fine. So we'll discuss ultimately again why that is. Shomer li v'eshmar lecha. But let's say if I say to someone, watch my object and I'll watch your object, then shomer sachar. So we'll say, I say to Reuven, watch my object, and then when you go away, I'll watch your object. So ultimately again, Reuven, I am considered to be a shomer sachar when I watch Reuven's object. Why? Because I got something in return for that service. In other words, the definition of a shomer chinam is someone who does not receive anything for his shmira. But in this case over here, because I am getting a service, when I watch Reuven's object, he is going to watch mine. Therefore, ultimately, I am a shomer sachar. Shomer li, va'amrle hanach lefanai. Let's say, if Reuven comes in and says, watch my object, they say, no problem, just put it down over here, then shomer chinam. Then I will say, that means I'm a shomer chinam. Meaning the act of telling someone, put it down over here, and not taking active possession of it, indicates that I'm just a shomer chinam. Next, Hava ala mashkon shomer sachar. Bosai, if I lent Reuven money and Reuven gave me a mashkon, gave me collateral, I am a shomer sachar. I'm a paid custodian on that collateral. Rabbi Huda says, Hilvo mos shomer chinam. So ultimately, again, if he lent me money, right? If I lent someone money, ultimately, again, I'm a shomer chinam. Hilvo peros. However, if I lent him property, if I lent him not property, peros objects, right? Merchandise. Then shomer sachar. Then ultimately, again, he's going to be a shomer sachar on that. Rabbi saying, now we'll discuss all of this in the Gemara. Rabbi Shaul says, Rashi Adam lahaskir mashkono sha'ani, lios posik. This is a very interesting halacha. If I lent money to a pauper, and the pauper gave me a mashkon, I am permitted to go ahead and rent out that mashkon. Lios posik fach. Now, when I rent out the mashkon, what am I doing? I'm utilizing the mashkon, and what I'm doing is I'm reducing the debt of the ani by the amount of the rental amount that I get for the mashkon. In other words, I'm using the ani's mashkon to generate income for myself, and I'm crediting that income against the debt. That is permitted. Why? Why? The Gemara says, because it's literally like I'm returning a lost object. In other words, I'm actually doing something beneficial for the ani by reducing his debt by utilizing the mashkon. Now, we'll say, now this is unique by the ani, because under other circumstances, again, we already began to discuss a little bit what level of usage a lender has regarding the mashkon. Generally, you can't do business with a mashkon, but by an ani, there's an exception. Since by the ani, the usage of his mashkon ultimately benefits the ani, I am permitted to do this. And I'm both saying, now the parameters of this, ultimately, again, what type of mashkon do I need the agreement of the ani? That we'll see in the Gemara. So it says the Gemara, Leima Masnisin, let's at least speak in the Gemara. Leima Masnisin. So both say, our Mishnah does not reflect the Vir Rabbi Meir. How so? This Sanya, Socher Ketzad Meshalim. So how does a Socher pay Rabbi Meir Omer Kishomer Chinam? Both say, Rabbi Meir holds that a Socher, that a renter is like a Shomer Chinam. So both say, so ultimately, again, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that if a Socher is like a Shomer Chinam, so right, Rabbi Huda Omer Kishomer Socher. Rabbi Huda says he's like a Shomer Socher. So both say, the assumption over here that we are making is that since Rabbi Meir holds that a Socher ultimately, again, is like a shomer chinam. Look at Rashi. Ketzad mishalim. The shomer chinam and shomer sachar. B'shol k'sivi socher. Lo k'sivi. Umahu din chiyuvo. Le'in gneva veida. Patur chayiv. So we'll say we assume ultimately again, we assume that if Rabbi Meir is going to treat the socher like a shomer chinam, he's going to treat the uman like a shomer chinam as well. And therefore that stands in contradiction to the Mishnah, which says that the uman is like a shomer socher. This sanya, because we learned socher kates and mishalim, Rabbi Meir omer kishomer chinam, Rabbi Huda omer kishomer socher, to which the Gemara says, no, afil tim Rabbi Meir, bahi anah, We assume that at the end of the day, even Rabbi Meir would agree in the Mishnah. Why? Because in that Hana, that ultimately, again, the Balabas goes ahead and chooses this Uman, right, and rents his services above anyone else, that has a dollar value to the Uman. In addition, Rabbi said, to the actual money he's going to get paid, it's good for his reputation, it's good for his business. So because of that additional benefit that he gets, that the Balabas chose him over other Umnin, that makes him into a Shomachin. Rabbi said, we'll stop over here, but essentially, let me just say this outside, because we'll pick up with this tomorrow. What the Gemara is going to suggest is the following, that at the end of the day, there are two ways you can become a Shomer Sachar. The classical Shomer Sachar is how I go over to Reuven, I say, Reuven, watch my object, here's $20 a day to watch my object. That's a Shomer Sachar. We're going to see now that there's another type of Shomer Sachar, Rabosai, which is a relationship that is engendered through almost a non-tangible reality that has a financial value to it. So for example, in this case over here, when I hire someone to do work, I give my watch to an Uman. Am I paying him to be a Shomer on the object? No, but because I chose him, as opposed to what? The other Umnin who I could have chosen, that there's a dollar value associated with that choosing of this particular Uman. That dollar value, that choosing of that Uman has a dollar value to the Uman, and in kind of the reciprocity for that dollar value being chosen manifests itself in the Uman taking upon himself a Shomer Sachar type of responsibility to the object. So again, we'll get into this a lot more tomorrow. Maybe I'll record a little bit more today so we start a little bit further down on the daf. But just understand, that's the reality that we're coming into over here. This is a new form of Shomer Sachar, where a Shmir that's not engendered by an explicit payment, but a Shmir that is created ultimately, again, through a non-tangible benefit that ultimately is quantifiable by the worker, by the Uman, in a financial way. All right, we'll pick up with it in Mirat Hashem tomorrow a little bit more. Lav Dafka. No, see, that's the chiddush over here. It's not the pshat that the